The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 17th of October, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals. HZM is ticker there, and Jeremy goes through the results of the pre-feasibility study of their 100% owned Vermelho Nickel Cobalt project in Brazil. Also on the podcast, David Sikdatira, Executive Chairman of Live Company Group, and David discusses the progress with their raft of upcoming shows in the next few months. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers WH Smith, Domino's Pizza, and Unilever all have results and news out today. Plus, as always, don't forget, I have two very important lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, and if you receive an RNS via our app is free to download. I would get it, honestly, it's free, but priceless. If you receive an RNS, okay, from us, free, of course, via notification, and you like the contents, hit the thumbs up button within that RNS, and it could feature on the podcast, and also could feature in one of those top 10 lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals. HZM is the ticker there. Jeremy, thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Justin, good morning. Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, and you've had some big figures out on the Vermelho pre-feasibility study, and we'll dig into those in a bit. As always, though, if someone is tuning in, I've never heard of Horizonte. How would you describe the business, Jeremy?
Yeah, so we are a dual-listed company on AIM in London and the TSX in Canada. We're focused in Brazil. We're a pure-play nickel company. We own 100% of the Araguaia ferronickel project, which we completed a feasibility study on late last year and is moving towards construction in mid-next year. And today's news was around our second asset, the 100% owned Vermelho Nickel Cobalt project, which is within trucking distance of Araguaia, and that is one of the largest, highest-grade nickel-cobalt resources globally.
Excellent stuff. So if someone is listening to this now, okay, they get that, and they say, okay, why nickel then?
Very good question. So why nickel? Nickel is the best-performing metal year-to-date. There are two or three key drivers around the fundamentals that make nickel so compelling. So if we look at those fundamentals, number one, on the demand side. So we've got demand on the traditional stainless steel market, which accounts for around 70% of nickel today, and that is growing year on year. We then have this new EV battery market, which is set to really move the dial significantly over the next sort of 10 to 15 years. Nickel is used in the batteries of these vehicles. And if you take anywhere sort of on the low end to the mid-range demand side, the main penetration point that people are talking about for electric vehicles is around 2025 to 2030. And there will be anywhere up to 30 to 40 million vehicles globally, which means around 500,000 to a million tons of new nickel is required, which is huge. And then the last factor is because the nickel market has been so depressed over the last 10 years, there are very few new projects at the scale of either Araguaia or Vermelho that are ready to come online to supply that market. So we're in a pretty unique position.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, all right. Well, let's dig into these figures. So you've released the pre-feasibility study numbers. Take us through it, Jeremy, if you could.
Yeah, so our base case model is based around a nickel price of 16,400, and nickel today is 16,600. So we're not looking at future nickel pricing, we're looking at values today. Mm-hmm. And that gives us a net present value of the project of over $1.7 billion, an internal rate of return of 26%, and after payback of capital, it generates over $7 billion of free cash flow over the 38-year mine life. So it's an extremely cash-generative asset. And the other key number is the C1 cost, which is the cost of production. And that will be around $7,200 a ton, which puts you as one of the lower cost producers globally. So again, $7,200 a ton is cost of production. Nickel price today is over $16,000. So this is a pretty unique project.
Yeah, and I've just done the maths on my calculator here, and that total cash flow after taxation over 30 years, about $192 million a year.
Correct.
That's a decent bit of cash, isn't it, coming in?
And what you have to remember is going back to the history of this project. I mean, this was developed by Vale, obviously one of the tier one major mining companies globally. We estimate they've spent over $200 million on this project, full feasibility, and they actually gave it the production decision in 2005, and they were going to build a 46,000 ton a year nickel plant here. So this is a high quality asset that's really been developed by one of the major mining leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's next here now, Jeremy? And of course, you've got Araguaia going on in parallel as well. What's next here, though?
Yeah, so for Vermelho, obviously pre-feasibility study complete. We've got some additional work streams that we now need to undertake, additional pilot scale test work on the flow sheet, updating some of the geology work, the engineering, and then it will run into a feasibility study. But obviously our main focus in terms of development assets is currently on the Araguaia Ferronickel project.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you talk about funding there. How do you go about, you know, raising the funds you need for that? Where do you start, and at what level are you at the moment?
Yeah, so I think on Araguaia, obviously we are in the process of raising the project finance for that project. We announced a month ago the first tranche of that money, which was $25 million for a royalty. Company currently has around $30 million in funds on the balance sheet. We're now working on the project finance piece, which is the debt. We're working with Endeavour Financial on that. We've got seven banks as part of that syndicate, and we're looking at around 60% debt. And then we're also working on the equity piece to close the whole transaction off. So it's a step-by-step process. It does take time. I mean, we're saying this is effectively a 12-month process, and it also depends upon global market conditions, metal price conditions, etc. And as we sort of discussed before we started this call, obviously it is a challenging market at the moment, but what's running well for us is nickel price.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I suppose that is it, isn't it? I mean, you know, longer term, the fundamentals here for nickel look very good. You can't deny, you know, like I said, the EV revolution going on, and they're playing into that. But at the moment, we've got this worry about, you know, the global growth slowing down. So is that the only, or the biggest risk at the moment, just the short-term issues?
Yeah, I think most of the groups that we are talking to on the finance side have a mid to long-term view. So they're not looking at the world today. So they are looking at a longer-term view here. And again, if you look at the long-term nickel price, it's currently running at about $19,800 a tonne. And we are seeing very positive traction on the financing piece. But obviously, you look at today and the response in the market. Yes, we've started up, but it is a challenging market around the current situation that we've got going on at home here.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, in summary, Jeremy, as always, if someone is liking this but not yet following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Number one, you've got two world-class assets that are 100% owned by the company. Both show compelling economics at the current market price. Number two, you have a short timeline to development on the leading asset, Araguaia. Number three, the company is well-funded. We've got $30 million on the balance sheet today, and four or five major shareholders led by Teck, Glencore, JP Morgan, and the nickel market fundamentals are compelling, and this is very well positioned to leverage off that.
Absolutely. Marvellous stuff, Jeremy. Good to chat to you as always, and no doubt we'll be catching up in a not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Good to speak. Many thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Sipletira, chairman of Live Company Group. LVCG is the ticker there. David, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Good morning.
Now, you've got lots going on. There's no news out per se, but of course, at the moment, you've got a lot of things happening, haven't you?
Yeah, tremendous amount. Huge. As I was talking to you earlier, in America they have an expression called March Madness, which is the college basketball season in March, which finishes with a Final Four. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel this is our March Madness. We, in the next 21 days, we would have completed 11 shows around the world, and that is our biggest activity to date. We are preparing today for a show launching in Toulouse. Obviously, it's a new venue for us, and we have a mini ocean model going there. We're in Geneva at the Palais Expo, where we have the full-size ocean project there. We're then moving to Brussels, where we have a new project called Fantasy Kingdom there. We're in Liverpool, where we have the Green Dragon. We're in Birmingham, our big show at NEC, which includes the Nickelodeon Paw Patrol. We are launched, or we've just launched, the Brickosaurs in Cologne. We're launching Animal Paradise in Boston. In a zoo in the Netherlands, we have launching October 1 a animal safari. We're launching in Leicester, Bricks in Space, and in Luton, a Paw Patrol. And to cap it all off, on the 6th of November, we'll be launching Mythical Beasts in Korea. So it's 11 activities, all completed within 21 days, and hundreds of thousands of people will be coming to see Brick Live around the world.
Yeah, wow. Do you know what? Just even you talking those through gives me a headache. I mean, from a logistical point of view, is it working out well?
Yes, it is. And of course, just to make sure we're all on top toe, it's on the famous period of Brexit. So we've got European bases to keeping our stuff safe and whatever. So we're well prepared for that. So it's logistically, it's very interesting. And it just shows you how far we've come. I actually had to write all these down. Normally, I don't write things down, but there was such a long list. I had to write them down. I'm very, very proud of where the company's come. Obviously, that's part of our 2019 program. We are well into, we're 30% plus for bookings for revenue bookings for 2020. And I expect that to increase by the time it gets to the year end. So we're building like mad, exhibiting. Everybody forgets that we're not just a bunch of builders. We are basically, we run exhibitions, of which, of course, Birmingham NEC is our flagship. So we've got exhibitions all around the world. If I think about being proud in having started the brand Brick Live just under 3 years ago, and this is a very, very key, it's our madness month, I guess. And that's why I wanted to let our shareholders and those shareholders who are yet to become part of this company to understand what it is we're about.
Yeah, absolutely. And how many shows were you hoping to complete this year then, David? And going forward, how many realistically can you do in a year?
Well, I think we've already announced that we're up to 63. Mm-hmm. This is where you get to dangerous territory, sort of putting estimates out and everything. But we hope to be able to announce further shows even in the last 2 months. So our original targeted number was 60, so we're in excess of that. We will obviously be announcing our target for 220 when we look into that. But frankly speaking, because we have the production capacity which we acquired with Bright Bricks, there is you never say never, but I see the number of shows growing, I mean, significantly. I mean, you can do as many, I mean, just to prove, we're doing 11 in 21 days. So you're limited a little bit by the fact that your audience is going to be on holiday, half terms, whatever. We are investigating a series of new ventures in the Southern Hemisphere so that when we get to the 2020 Christmas periods where there were less on in Europe, we will be able to open up more shows. That's in the works right now. So we are, the answer to your question, unlimited, really. And to remind your listeners, within nearly a year of use, these models are paid for and they have 10 years of life plus. So the real exciting future for this company will come in the latter part of 2020 and 2021 when revenues are coming against things that have already been paid for.
Yeah, and as far as the company is concerned, I mean, do you have discussions that maybe would surprise investors that there are other opportunities, not in the mainstream in the business, but not core, but maybe there's some other opportunities as well elsewhere?
What do you mean? So I didn't really fully understand that. What do you mean?
I mean, you are doing a lot of shows now, and you a lot of connections. Like you got Paw Patrol, and do you find that more opportunities are being presented to you?
Oh, absolutely. The Nickelodeon introduction, the fact that we dealt with Penguin, and I've said several times that it's out in your domain that we're in discussion with other rights holders, IP holders. Yes, people are coming to us all the time, and I think that's going to increase. And I think that if I take Toulouse is the first show in France. It's not an experiment, but it's a test for us, and we're in partnership with an extremely big company called GL Events. It's a €1 billion turnover business, and it is the event business in France. So if that works, there's a classic case of how it will expand very quickly. And then we've got the old favourites. I mean, coming up will be Monaco over Christmas. I was there the other day talking to the team down there, and they are very excited. We're going to open a brand new unknown piece of content towards the end of November, which I think will surprise a lot of people and help them with their ticket sales. So yes, they were always doing new things, and on a personal basis, I hope to get to Toulouse. Well, I'll be getting to Toulouse and Geneva. I'll be going to Birmingham. I've been asked to go to the opening in Korea and in Germany, and so it's a busy week for me. Well, as well, I want to give support to as many people as I can. And one final thing is, NEC over the half term, it's the I think it's the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of the end of October, beginning of November. If any shareholders wish to come, they just have to contact our website, our email address, and we're happy to give them tickets. And if there's anybody who becomes a shareholder, having been there, happy to refund their tickets that they bought. So I urge everybody who's listening to this, NEC, turn up. We'll be there and be good. Be happy to meet you. That's including you, Justin, of course.
Yeah, but surely they have to buy more shares in the value of the ticket. Otherwise, there's an arbitrage deal going on there.
No, it's just I'm just trying to encourage people to come and see what we do, really. I know that we've had, I think, 60 shareholders have taken up the offer to come and bring their family. Marvellous. So that's good.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, well, listen, that's one good reason to hold shares. For people now listening who are not already, give them three reasons here, David, why they should add you to their watch list at least so they can do some further research here.
I think it's that as we're a company who owns our own IP as well as using other IPs, the BrickLife Zoo success growing all the time proves that fact. So we own our own IP, BrickLife. As today's call shows, we're global. We're not in one country. We're all over the world. And the other thing which I always say is myself and other directors and managers have a significant stake in the company, which should encourage people to believe that, you know, passion is part of the business as well.
Absolutely. And, as an investor myself in different companies, that's one of the first things I always look at. I mean, do the owners have some skin in the game? Because it aligns them and you know they're working, you know, as business owners rather than just high-paid managers, you know? So I like that.
Absolutely. We're partners. As I often use this, I know that it's a little worn sometimes, but Barcelona Football Club, one of the most successful football clubs in the world, is actually owned by the fans, and it doesn't matter how big my shareholding is or someone else's, we're all stakeholders in this together.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Good to chat to you, David, as always, and I hope you become unscathed at the other end.
I see you at one of these places. You never know. There's enough of them now.
Exactly.
Okay.
Who knows? Cheers, David.
Thank
speak soon.
Thank you so much, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Yeah, very good, thanks. Very good.
What's the market like at the upper end there? Is it, you know, I mean, obviously there's a lot of constituents, but generally I'm just sick of all this, you know, heavy, it's weighing on the market, just negative sentiment around trade, around Brexit, you know, just global growth slowing down. It just seems to be at the moment I'm reaching the end of, well, I've reached the end of my patience several times, but I still hang in there, you know, hoping for a
absolutely,
break.
Absolutely, yeah, no. Yeah. Well, the thing is that if you look at, since we last talked, we've had two really big days of rotation in the markets where there's obviously been a little bit of residual Brexit, hope deals and other stuff. The pound has gone up, and at the top end of the market, there's been a real distinct tone to how that's influenced both the FTSE 100 and FTSE 250. I mean, the big FTSE 100 exporters have come under pressure because suddenly the pound goes up, so therefore those profits in dollars or euros or yen or whatever it might be are suddenly being translated to a slightly different exchange rate. So they've been under a little bit of pressure. They've been a bit overloved and now a bit less so. But by contrast, some of those underappreciated areas, those sort of more domestic-centred areas, the banks, the retailers, the construction stocks and related, they've suddenly become a bit more loved because of the movement of the pound, the hope for a Brexit deal, the fact that the UK economy might not be sort of just about to enter a zone of apocalypse and, you know, very low growth or whatever else. So it's been really quite interesting, quite a lot of rotation, and I think actually that's quite good and quite exciting, good for stock pickers, you know, mildly good for my pension fund, so, you know, no complaints from me.
Yeah,
and we might get an end to the Brexit debacle. You never know, we might actually get the other side and start worrying about how the UK is going to be when we are the other side, which is, you know, the 2020s, how we stay competitive and relevant, which surely must be the thing policymakers should be worrying about.
Yeah. Trouble is now, what's the other side of the Brexit debate? We'll have, global growth is slowing down.
So it's like, we're going to have an election. That's what we're going to have, the other side of the Brexit debate, I think, which is his own excitement.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so stocks-wise, what are you looking at? What's the first one out?
Well, the first one we've got to look at is WH Smith's. I mean, you know, this is kind of a boring stock at many levels. You and I remember it on the high street. You'd go down there for a bunch of things before going back to school or a magazine, newspaper, etc. And, of course, the high street business is remarkably dull. They've announced today that the high street profitability is absolutely flat on its back. Literally 0% growth. That's what they anticipate for the full year. So no excitement there. So you're asking, why on earth the shares up 5-6% today? Well, they're up because the company's announced not only an acquisition in the States, but they've also announced a financing of it. They've issued about 7% of share capital, which is quite striking. Normally, when you issue more stock, share prices go down. You know, it's basic supply and demand, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But in this case, the share's gone up 5-6% because I think the market's saying, hang on, they're buying yet another travel retailer. So, you know, i.e. more international WH Smith shops in airports and train stations and bus stations and stuff like that. And it diversifies them a bit further away from the high street. And the travel business, as per the numbers today, is growing sort of 12-13%, allowing the dividend to go up 8-9%, despite the fact the high street business is flat. So it looks as if, once again, WH Smiths is changing its mix ever further to becoming more like a travel retailer rather than a high street one. And as I say, the market says we like a bit of that, hence the shares going up.
Yeah, so I suppose they found this strategy, because I know they've been highly criticised in the high street, haven't they, about overpricing and all that stuff. And but it seems their strategy is that travel sort of side of it, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and obviously the pricing, you can be more criticised on the travel pricing, because, you know, you go to an airport and
it's crazy. I know, it's nuts, isn't it?
The prices are definitely higher, you know, for food or drink. The trouble is, it's a local monopoly, isn't it? If you're in the airport, you're suckered. You can't go down the road to somebody else in particular. But, you know, if you get the franchises and you're paying the franchise fees and whatever, but you pay your money and takes your choice, I guess, and they're making it work at the moment. So it looks like an interesting strategy. What they're buying is a US business called Marshall Retail Group. They're buying it for $400 million, which is a good chunk of change. Now, my observation is that they are paying quite a lot of money for it, about 13 times EBITDA, which is not super cheap. They're hoping to get some synergies. They've got another US brand called InMotion, which no doubt there'll be some synergies, distribution and whatever else. But it's what I would call a bit expensive looking. So they're going to have to work a bit hard to fully justify that. But the market likes it today. For what it's worth, I mean, the shares, if you look at the share price, that £20 level's been a very big one for them. And the shares have shot up to, I think, about £22, just under £22 as we speak. So they've obviously moved above that level, helped by the announcement of this deal. So a bit of technical strength there. But I think for those who are kind of trying to wait for sort of to try to buy something at a cheaper price or a keener price, that £20 level is quite a big old level for the shares.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's gone to 22 before, but a couple of months back, and it didn't sustain that. It came back down, and then it had another attempt, a bit lower, but 21.5. It'll be interesting to see where it's at the end of the day, because it's rising quite strongly today. But if it closes above 22, that's quite good, I suppose. But if it closed below that 22 level, because it failed there previously. So we'll see,
That's right.
Yeah, it is true about airports. Because like, people are going on holidays and stuff like that. They exist in a different world, almost. It's like people accept prices. I always remember, I think it was, I don't know who it was, someone said, do retailers in airports have any idea what normal retailers charge outside airports? Because it seems that the pricing is completely, a law unto itself. And people don't seem to mind, do they,
No, that's well. I guess you're in holiday mode by definition.
Holiday mode.
But B is sort of. Of course, they do know what people charge because, as I say, W. H. Smith clearly has them both.
But they're kind of.
I think it's this. It comes back down to sort of competition versus these sort of pseudo monopoly type things. Now, when you're on the high street, you can walk down the road, but you're also much more exposed to online competition. WH Smith clearly has online capability, but obviously there are a myriad of companies. If you want to buy some school supplies or something like that, or a book, which typically go back a generation, you would go to WH Smith's for. You can now go to a myriad of other operators. If you're in the airport, there's no point in getting onto your phone and ordering something from Amazon because it's not going to deliver to the airport. You want it right here, right now. There's that immediacy. The same at train stations to some extent. If your train's going in 10 minutes, you want something to read, you're not going to kind of go down the road. You're going to buy there or not bother. Yeah. They're paying up for the franchise. Let's say 13 times EBITDA is pretty firm. Yeah, sure, it's earnings are accretive because everything is at the moment at low interest rates and everything else, but they're going to have to work a little bit to make it work. But the market believes in it today, and hence the shares are up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you spend a couple of grand on a holiday, overspending a couple of quid on a couple of stuff from WH Smith's not going to make a big dent, is it? What's next, Chris?
Well, going from the high street and retailers to pizzas and Domino's pizzas, which obviously Domino's has got an amazing franchise in the UK and Ireland. When you look at the stats about their distribution, their use of technology and everything else, It is blooming good. It really is. They're a top rate operator.
Do you know what I was thinking there, Chris? Do you know what I'm saying? I think they are pretty much everywhere. And I think are they saturated? I don't know. How many more can they open? I thought, how about they do little takeaway things or in airports?
Well, there you go. Perhaps that's an idea for them. They actually believe that if you look at penetration rates sort of versus population and whatever else in various other countries, inevitably the US of A, actually there's more to go. They're actually slightly underpenetrated. They still see a run rate of a few more hundred stores in and franchises in the UK and Ireland. And obviously, the advantage of that, particularly on a franchise system, is that it's really capital efficient for the company. But the trouble is, of course, they have been bogging it up. Domino's has been brilliant at many levels. Use of technology is first rate. As a franchise distribution level, first rate. You can debate the pizzas, ironically, but that doesn't seem to matter so much. Again, it's more availability and speed and ease of use. But they've had two big problems over the last little while. The first problem is that the management team has hacked off its franchisees, which is never a smart idea to do. The CEO is going. He's gone through, I think it's about four FDs in 4 or 5 years. It's been a right old mess, and the franchisees are hacked off. So you put all of that together, and that is not helpful. There's been lots of adverse press about that. He's going, though. There seem to be making a change to try to bring the franchisees, unsurprisingly, much more kind of aligned with the overall group's interest, which surely is a smart thing to do. So there was a further tick in the box on that in today's statement. But the really thing that's caught my imagination is that whilst in UK and Ireland, it's a great business, profitable, still growing over, I think, 3.8% organic growth as per the data released today. So still growing despite the high penetration. Elsewhere in Europe, it's been struggling. They're subscale. They're competing with many other people. They haven't got that embedded position. And so in Germany, Switzerland, Sweden, Norway, and Iceland, I think it is, they've been really struggling. Again, today's data shows no growth, literally zero organic growth. But they've also decided to sell those businesses, which I think actually, it looks like a retreat. It looks like, oh my goodness, we've bogged it up. But it's the smart thing to do. You know, they clearly were struggling to get to scale. There's clearly a lot of different competition out there, and they've decided, rather than being a sort of a second tier player or just one of the boys, if you like, they've decided to exit and move on. And actually, I think that's also a smart thing to do. Focus on your great franchisee market in the UK and Ireland, and crack on. So the shares are up a few percent today off the back of that, and are moving away from the 240-250p level, which they've been kind of moving around at for quite a few months now.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's a strong brand, but there's no lack of competition, is there? You know, there's plenty of these shops around, aren't there? You know,
that's right. But I guess the difference is with Domino's in the UK and Ireland is that they have not only are they the incumbent, just to some extent, in terms of, but they've also their use of the technology was so much quicker than everybody else's that they're not that combination of market share and the aggressive rollout of technology is kind of quite compelling. By contrast, you know, when you don't have the distribution in these other countries, when, of course, you're just making up the numbers, everyone is launching technology off a similar kind of profile of a limited market share and everything else, is much harder. You know, their first mover advantage is much more distinct in the UK and Ireland. Absolutely, there are many, many other companies, but the trouble is they've got name recognition and everything else, and I guess some good customer experiences and related to back up, you know, make that with good locations and the technology, that's a winning backdrop in the UK and Ireland. So I guess that's the difference. And the fact they're going to be focusing just on those businesses going forward is clearly going to become a cash cow business. You can debate, you know, what price to give it, but no surprises to see the share going up today.
Yeah, it needs to get above that 280 level. It's tried to beat
that's
that
right.
To once, twice, almost, it's the third time it's having a go at it, so if it gets above that, it'd be good. Cool, what's anything else, Chris?
Well, quick one on Unilever. So, you know, going from a couple of kind of, I guess, sort of mid-caps with WH Smith and Domino's to one of the big boys in Unilever. Unilever is a funny old company. Clearly, they've got a bunch of products, everything from ice cream to soap to, you know, bunch of other household and consumer brands. And clearly, it's a solid old name. And, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong in today's numbers. You look at them and they're talking, they're basically retaining their forecasts. But the tone of it, again, is a little bit dull. You know, continuing to expect underlying sales growth to be in the lower half of our multi-year 3-5% range, strong free cash flow, wah-de-wah. The shares have gone up a little bit today, but when I look at it, I'm thinking to myself, the trouble is, and this comes back to something I said, you know, 10 minutes ago, which is I've been finding more opportunity in those shares people are rotating into. You know, people have loved up stuff like Unilever on the basis that it's solid, it earns a lot of its money internationally, it's a bond proxy with a bit of yield, which has been a lot more attractive than, let's say, many fixed income products because of its defensive nature and higher than, you know, than a few percent dividend yield. The trouble is, I just think it's just not cheap today. And, you know, they've talked about lower end of 3-5% sales growth range. They've talked about a little bit of operating margin leverage and things like that. So, you know, you're probably going to get a mid-single digit earnings growth rate here. Well, you know, that's fine, but you are paying up, you know, big time for these companies now, you know, something either side of a 20 times PE. And, you know, does it feel particularly cheap to me? Absolutely not. Solid, sure. Good brands, absolutely. You know, exposure to the emerging markets and many other international markets, absolutely. But is it inherently cheap, attractive, compelling at these levels? I'm not sure. And technically, you know, that 50 quid level, it's rolled right off that and is now lurking in the lower half of the 40 quid and change range. So, yeah, it's solid, but doesn't inspire me, basically.
Yeah, you always got to try and get a bargain, especially when we see, you know, headwinds, you know, economic headwinds ahead of us, because, you know, the entire market may drop a little bit, you know. And so you always got to try and get a bargain, haven't you, really?
That's right. And the thing, you know, it's interesting. You look at the three companies we talked about today. WH Smith is transforming. And if you're going to buy the share, I wouldn't personally. I think I'd wait for below £20. But if you're going to buy it, you buy it because you believe in the transformation, the greater mix of retail profits than high street profits. If you're going to buy Domino's, it's again change. It's focus with them. They're getting smaller, not bigger, in the sense they're hiving off the international bit. You think that, you know, the growth of an efficient pizza distribution mechanism, it's just an inherent growth theme. You could well be right about that. That looks still a bit more compelling. But Unilever, yeah, you've bought it because of defensive capability. But kind of, where are we? We're kind of in that funny middle ground. As you say, if the world kind of rights itself a bit, if we get the other side of Brexit, world trade chat and whatever, then surely people are going to want a little bit more excitement than Unilever. And if we're not, then is it particularly cheap? It might be somewhere to hide. It's going to persist. But is it particularly cheap? Are you being compensated by a big dividend yield? The answer is not particularly. So I think it's kind of caught a bit in the middle. And certainly I would only look again when the share price has a 3 in front of it.
Marvellous stuff. Cheers, Chris. And we'll speak to you next week.
Pleasure. Sounds good.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Eve Sleep. That's EVE ticker, down 2% at 2.3 pence. At 4, Dev Clever Holdings, DEV, at down 0.75% at 3.325 pence. At 3, Open Orphan, ORPH. It's up 0.74% at 6.8 pence. I do like what they're doing there, the guys. You know, I like tech companies. I like software that's scalable. And their genomic sort of data platform, huge potential, really has. And like I said, it's very scalable. And even nominal success is worth multiples of their valuation right now. And the guys behind this company, like Cahill, and of course Morris and Brendan, Morris on the podcast yesterday, you know, they've had a massive experience previously. And this, they reckon, well, for Cahill and Brendan, this is the last big roll of the dice in this company. They want to make a big company of it. So they've got lots of ambition. They've got a plan. And I like what they're doing. This is just one part of the business, this genomic data platform. You know, there's their digital rep. There's also Venn itself. And they're also acquiring some businesses. So they've got a lot of ambition. I like it a lot. ORPH, do your own research. In fact, you know, by all means, just Google Justin Waite, Open Orphan. I've done a sort of a couple of videos on them, and they're worth doing some research on. Okay, at 2, OilX. It's OEX, down 4.4% at 0.215 pence. Number one most followed company is with EVR Holdings, up 21.9%. There's a big rise there because they're not a tiny market cap. It's quite a substantial market cap. Okay. Top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Shantagol Limited, Q3 2019 production and operational update. At 4, EVR Holdings, Melody VR launches exclusive 5G partnership with O2, that's what saw the rise today. At 3, Jangada Mines, director of PDMR shareholding. At 2, Feedback Update Re-Bleeper. Number 1, of course, Jerry Martin on the podcast today, talking about the Vermelio pre-feasibility study. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos. Appreciatus.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.